Okay, so ready for a deep dive. Today, it's all about chemotherapy side effects. We're digging into the heavy stuff, medical texts, research, you name it, to give you the full picture.
Because it's one thing to know what happens, right?
Yeah.
But understanding why it happens, that's where it gets really interesting.
Absolutely. But before we go full on science geek, let's do a quick chemo 101. Think of these drugs like tiny assassins targeting those rapidly dividing cells. Problem is,
our bodies are full of those cells, not just the bad guys either. The lining of your gut, hair follicles, they're constantly renewing, so they take a hit too.
Like friendly fire, huh? So how do they even develop these chemo drugs? It's got to be more complicated than just mixing stuff in a lab.
Oh, way more complicated. We're talking years, sometimes decades of research. Starts with an idea, then rigorous testing, first in the lab, then in animals, with a ton of ethical considerations, by the way. And that's before it even gets close to humans.
Wow, no kidding. So there's not like one chemo cocktail that works for everything, right?
Nope. It's more like a whole arsenal. Each chemo drug is designed to target a specific weakness in cancer cells, so they each have their own, let's say, personality and, yeah, their own side effects.
Speaking of, let's dive into those side effects. You've organized things by body system, starting with the one that usually bears the brunt, the gastrointestinal system.
Makes sense. The gut is often ground zero, and the side effect everyone thinks of first, nausea and vomiting.
Yeah, the classic chemo scene in movies.
Yeah.
But there's some serious science behind it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And to make it even more interesting, there are different types of chemo-induced nausea. You've got acute nausea, which hits fast, within a day of treatment, and then there's delayed nausea, which can take days to show up.
So how do they know what anti-nausea meds to give? Is it a guessing game?
Not anymore. See, chemo drugs trigger these chain reactions in the body. Neurotransmitters, your serotonin, dopamine, they go haywire, sending signals to the brain that basically scream, "Get this stuff out!"
So, like, hitting the panic button.
Exactly. And we're getting better at figuring out which drugs trigger which signals so they can choose the right defense.
So it's about intercepting those signals before they hit the brain's vomit button.
That's a good way to put it. And they often use a multi-pronged approach, you know. Pre-medication is key. They might combine drugs from different classes, 5-HT3 antagonists, NK1 antagonists, things like that. Sometimes even steroids get thrown in the mix. And get this, for those times when nothing seems to work, they're even turning to cannabinoids.
Wait, so like chemo patients are getting a little herbal help?
Well, it's not quite that simple. We're talking about specific cannabinoid-based medications, but yeah, it shows how our thinking on nausea management is evolving.
That's wild. But nausea and vomiting are just the beginning, right?
Right.
Our sources say the rest of the digestive system takes a hit too.
Right, because remember how we talked about chemo targeting those rapidly dividing cells? Well, your gut lining is constantly renewing itself, making it super vulnerable.
Which is where the diarrhea comes in.
Exactly. It's like the body's trying to flush everything out as quickly as possible. But here's the thing. It's not always just the chemo itself. Some of those drugs have byproducts that wreak havoc on the gut.
Like what?
Irinotecan, for example. It's a common chemo drug, but it produces this compound, SN38G, that just destroys those delicate cells in your intestines.
Ouch. So the cure is also part of the problem. That's rough.
It is. And there's another layer to this. Your gut is full of good bacteria, right? They help you digest, boost your immunity, the whole deal. But chemo can wipe them out, leaving you wide open to infections like C. difficile, which, you guessed it, causes even more diarrhea.
It's a 1-2 punch.
But diarrhea isn't just uncomfortable, right? It can actually be dangerous during chemo.
Absolutely. Dehydration is a major concern. It can throw your whole body out of whack, making it harder to bounce back from treatment. So how do they manage that? Lots of fluids.
Hydration is key, especially with drinks that have electrolytes. But they also use meds like loperamide, which basically slows down those gut contractions, you know? And sometimes they'll even use octreotide, which reduces fluid secretion in the gut.
Wow. It's crazy how they can fine-tune all of that.
Hmm.
But chemo can also cause the opposite problem, right?
You got it.
Hmm?
We can't forget about constipation. Chemo can slow down the nerves that control your digestive system. Basically, it's like hitting the brakes on the whole operation.
Instead of things moving too fast, they come to a screeching halt. Not good either.
Not at all. And those pain meds that a lot of chemo patients rely on, they can actually make constipation worse. And believe me, if you ignore it, it can lead to serious complications.
So how do you get things moving again?
Sometimes just simple stuff like more fiber and fluids can help. But depending on how bad it is, they might break out the big guns. laxatives.
Laxatives, huh? I never realized how many kinds there were.
Oh, there's a whole world of laxatives out there. Bulk forming, osmotic, stimulant, stool softeners. Each one works a little differently, so finding the right one for the patient is key.
Sounds like oncologists need a degree in plumbing on top of everything else.
You could say that. It's not just about treating the symptoms, though. It's about preventing them in the first place.
Like a preemptive strike. So we've covered the runs and, well, the opposite. Anything else chemo throws at the digestive system?
One more, and it's a big one. Anorexia and cachexia.
Anorexia, like the eating disorder.
It shares some similarities, but it's more complex. This isn't about not wanting to eat. It's the body's whole metabolic system going haywire because of the cancer and the chemo.
So it's not about willpower, just forcing down a few more bites?
No, it's way beyond that. Cachexia, which is the severe muscle wasting and weight loss that can happen, that's a really tough side effect. It leaves people so weak, they can barely handle the treatment.
So what do you do?
It's a multi-pronged approach. Nutritional supplements are big. Got to get those calories and nutrients in. Sometimes meds that stimulate appetite can help. And in extreme cases, they might even use tube feeding to make sure the patient is getting enough.
Wow, that's a lot to handle just for the digestive system. It's amazing how one type of treatment can impact the whole body like that.
Mm-hmm. It really shows you how interconnected everything is. And speaking of interconnected, let's move on to the blood and immune system. That's where chemotherapy's effects are called myelosuppression, and this is where things can get serious.
Okay, break it down for me. Myelosuppression, what is it, and why is it such a big deal?
So picture your bone marrow. That's your body's blood cell factory, right? Stem cells are working overtime in there, churning out red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets, you name it.
And because chemo targets those rapidly dividing cells.
Bingo. Bone marrow becomes public enemy number one. That's myelosuppression. The bone marrow gets suppressed and everything goes haywire.
Okay, so what are we talking about here? What happens when your blood cell production gets messed up?
Imagine your body's like a fortress and your white blood cells are the guards. Myelosuppression. That's like slashing your security force. Now, those little infections your body would normally shrug off, they become major threats.
It's not just the chemo itself, it's what happens to your defenses because of it.
Exactly. And that's not all. Low platelet counts, another lovely side effect, can basically turn you into a walking bruise. Even a small cut takes forever to clot, and internal bleeding. That's a real risk.
It's crazy how important something as small as a platelet really is.
Right. And don't forget those red blood cells. Low red blood cell count means anemia, which equals feeling wiped out all the time.
Like your battery is constantly drained, even after a full charge.
Perfect way to put it. So yeah, managing myelosuppression, it's a huge part of chemo.
So how do you do it? Boost blood cell production when the factory's struggling?
Sometimes it's about buying time. Blood transfusions are a lifesaver, literally replenishing those red blood cells, white blood cells, and platelets.
Like sending in reinforcements.
Exactly. But long term, you got to get that bone marrow back on track. That's where growth factors come in. They're like personal trainers for your bone marrow, encouraging those stem cells to pump up the volume.
Supporting the body's natural ability to heal, right? This is seriously amazing stuff.
It really is. It's a testament to how far we've come in understanding and fighting this disease.
Okay, so we've hit the digestive system, the blood marrow. Anything chemo doesn't affect.
Well, there's this one thing, often overlooked, but super frustrating for patients. Chemo brain.
Oh yeah, I've heard that term. But what is it, really? Like, just forgetting where you put your keys, or is it more than that?
It can definitely involve those senior moments, forgetting appointments or names, but chemo brain, or what's clinically known as chemotherapy-induced cognitive impairment, often goes way beyond that. Imagine this constant fog in your head, making it hard to concentrate, process info, even follow a conversation.
Sounds scary, honestly, and frustrating.
It can be both, especially since we don't fully understand what causes it. Could be direct damage from the drugs, inflammation in the nervous system, hormonal changes, even the stress of a cancer diagnosis. Probably a combo deal.
So if you don't know the cause, how do you treat it?
That's the million-dollar question, and there's no easy answer, sadly. No magic pill for this one. But supportive care can be really helpful.
Supportive care meaning?
Things like cognitive training, which is basically like exercise for your brain, helps sharpen memory and attention.
Like those brain training apps and games.
Exactly. And like with anything, lifestyle plays a role. Enough sleep, managing stress, regular exercise, it all helps.
Give your brain the best chance to heal and recover. So is chemo brain permanent or does it fade?
Good news is, for most people, the fog does lift over time. It might take weeks, months, even longer for some to get back to their baseline, but for some, a small percentage, it can linger, which obviously has a huge impact on their life.
Wow, it really shows you how long-lasting these treatments can be. Okay, so we've covered the gut, blood, brain. Is there anywhere chemo doesn't reach?
Well, even the heart, your hardest working muscle, isn't immune.
Hold on. Chemo can damage your heart.
It can, but it's important to note that not all chemo drugs affect the heart equally. There's a group called anthracyclines. Those are the ones known for their cardiotoxicity.
Cardiotoxicity, that can't be good.
It's not. Doxorubicin is one example, and while it's really effective against certain cancers, it can damage the heart muscle, the scariest part. This damage might not show up for years, leading to problems like heart failure down the road.
Like a ticking time bomb.
Kinda, yeah. That's why they monitor patients closely, especially those on anthracyclines. They use echocardiograms, basically an ultrasound for your heart, to see how well it's pumping.
Checking if the heart's working too hard because of the treatment.
Right. They focus on the left ventricular ejection fraction, or LVEF, which tells them how much blood the left ventricle pumps out with each beat. If it starts dropping, that's a red flag.
And then what? They stop the chemo.
It depends. How bad is the decline? What's the patient's overall health like? They might lower the dose, switch to a different drug that's easier on the heart, or, yeah, in some cases, they might pause treatment altogether to give the heart a break.
Man, that's a lot of factors to juggle. So, heart's at risk. What about the liver? Another vital organ I'd imagine chemo could affect.
Good thinking. The liver is your detox center, processing everything from the food you eat to, yep, those chemo drugs.
So, is it taking one for the team? Getting damaged while trying to clean up the mess?
Unfortunately, yes. It's a bit ironic, but the organ working so hard to filter out those toxins can end up as collateral damage.
That seems unfair.
Monitoring is key. They do regular blood tests to check liver function, looking for enzymes that indicate damage. If those levels start creaking up, they might adjust the dose or switch to a different drug that the liver can handle better.
Again, it's about finding that balance, attacking the cancer without destroying the rest of the body in the process. Chemo is a double-edged sword, that's for sure.
You said it. Powerful, but needs to be used carefully.
Okay, so we've done the digestive system, blood, brain, heart, liver. Is there anything left, anywhere chemo hasn't reached?
You'd think we'd be done, right? But even the lungs, essential for something as basic as breathing, aren't off limits.
Wait, chemo can mess with your lungs too.
It can, but thankfully, lung damage from medications, or pulmonary toxicity as it's called, is less common than some of the other side effects we've talked about.
Okay, well, that's something. But for those who do have lung issues, what are we talking about? What actually happens?
There's this drug, bleomycin. It's known for causing lung damage, specifically something called pulmonary fibrosis. Basically, scar tissue builds up in the lungs, making them stiff, and it gets harder to breathe.
So your lungs lose their stretchiness. That sounds terrifying.
It can be, especially if it's not caught early. Luckily, doctors know this is a risk and keep a close eye on lung function, especially for patients on bleomycin. If they spot lung damage early on, they can adjust the treatment to prevent it from getting worse.
Dodging bullets left and right. We've covered so much, from head to toe, literally. Digestive system, blood, nervous system, heart, liver, even the lungs. Anything left?
We've hit a lot, but we can't forget the genitourinary system, kidneys, and bladder.
Okay, now we're getting a little personal.
It can be a touchy subject, but it's important. Chemo can affect your kidneys and bladder in a lot of ways, causing problems from mild to severe.
Like what? Give me the rundown, starting with the not so scary stuff.
Well, chemo can irritate the bladder, making you feel like you have to pee all the time, but then nothing much comes out. Not fun.
I can imagine. So that's the mild end of things. What about the more serious stuff?
In some cases, chemo can cause hemorrhagic cystitis, which basically means bleeding in the bladder.
Okay, yeah, that took a turn. Bleeding in the bladder.
Ouch. Yeah, it can be pretty painful, and it can also lead to UTIs. Definitely not something to ignore.
So how do they treat that? Like a regular UTI?
Depends on how bad it is. Sometimes just drinking more fluids can help flush things out. But for more severe cases, they might use medications to protect the bladder lining or even do bladder irrigations to remove blood clots and prevent more bleeding.
It's amazing how they've figured out ways to deal with all these specific issues. You know, going through all this, I keep thinking about the impact on a patient's quality of life. We've talked about the physical stuff, but what about the less visible, more personal side of things?
You're right, and that brings us to another important aspect, sexual and reproductive health, which often gets overlooked.
Yeah, it's understandable why people might shy away from that topic, but it's so important to talk about.
It really is. We're talking about things that can have a huge impact on someone's sense of self, their relationships, their future. For many, especially younger patients, the possibility of infertility is one of the scariest parts of a cancer diagnosis.
It's like this whole other layer of loss on top of everything else.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just fertility. Chemo can also mess with sexual function, causing things like low libido, vaginal dryness in women, erectile dysfunction in men. Tough stuff to talk about, but so important to bring up with your doctor.
Because there are ways to deal with it, right? It's not hopeless.
Absolutely not. For fertility, you've got sperm banking for men, egg freezing or embryo freezing for women. But these are conversations to have and decisions to make before starting chemo, which adds a whole other level of stress.
Trying to make life-altering decisions while dealing with a life-altering diagnosis. That's rough.
That's why open communication with your healthcare team is so important. You need a safe space to talk about these things, get your questions answered, and know your options.
And for those struggling with sexual function after chemo, what can be done?
The good news is there are treatments, medications for things like vaginal dryness or erectile dysfunction, and even counseling or therapy to help patients and their partners work through the emotional and relationship challenges.
It's reassuring to know there's support for that side of things, too. It's not just about surviving cancer, it's about living a full life after cancer. We've covered so much ground here, from the ins and outs of chemo side effects to the, frankly, amazing world of new treatments like immunotherapy and targeted therapy. Mm. But cancer treatment is always changing, right?
Always. It's a rapidly evolving field. And while we focused on chemo today, it's important to remember it's not the only weapon we've got. Immunotherapy and targeted therapy are offering new hope for people with all types of cancer.
Okay, now that is exciting. I'm ready to hear all about this cutting-edge stuff.
Yeah, it's a whole new world in cancer treatment, and immunotherapy is leading the charge. Instead of going straight for those cancer cells like chemo, it basically rallies your own immune system to do the dirty work.
So it's like giving your body's natural defenses, what, a serious upgrade?
Exactly. Like taking the brakes off your immune system and giving it a target to focus on. And the results have been amazing, especially for cancers that were once really tough to treat. We're seeing long-term remission in some cases where chemo might have had limited success.
Okay, that's huge. But I'm guessing it's not all sunshine and roses. Are there downsides to this immune system boost?
You're right. There's always a trade-off. It's generally easier to handle than chemo, but immunotherapy can come with its own set of side effects, what we call immune-related adverse events, or IRAEs for short.
Immune-related adverse events. Sounds kind of intense. What happens when your immune system gets like a little too excited about the fight?
Think of it this way. You've got this army of highly trained warriors, right, ready to take down the enemy. But sometimes they get a little carried away and can't tell the difference between the bad guys and the good guys.
Feels like friendly fire, but inside your own body. Yikes.
Yeah, not ideal. But it's something doctors are getting better at recognizing. These IRAEs can affect all sorts of organs. You can have inflammation in the lungs called pneumonitis, or in the liver called hepatitis. Even the gut can get inflamed, which is called colitis.
So even though it's a completely different approach from chemo, immunotherapy can still affect a lot of the same organs.
It can, although the way it happens is different. And it's not just those organs either. Even the endocrine glands, like the thyroid and pituitary, can end up in the crosshairs.
Wow. So the immune system, as amazing as it is, can be a bit of a loose cannon. How do doctors even know if it's an IRAE or something else going on?
It can be tricky because some of the symptoms are similar to other things, but oncologists are getting better at recognizing the patterns, the timing of these immune reactions. If someone starts having certain symptoms soon after starting immunotherapy, that's a red flag. Luckily, we've got ways to manage these reactions.
Okay, so what do? Hit the brakes on the immune system.
Sort of. Corticosteroids, like prednisone, are usually the first line of defense. They're like, firefighters, you know, dousing those inflammatory fires caused by those overactive immune cells.
So it's all about finding that sweet spot, enough immune system boost to fight the cancer, but not so much that it starts attacking everything else.
Exactly. And that's the challenge, the exciting part of immunotherapy. We're still learning about its long-term effects and how to fine-tune it to get the most benefit with the fewest risks.
It's like charting a whole new territory in medicine, every discovery leading to more questions, more possibilities. So we've got immunotherapy, the immune system booster. What about those targeted therapies you mentioned? Are they another tool in the toolbox?
They are. Targeted therapies are all about precision. They go after specific vulnerabilities in cancer cells, like a guided missile. The goal is to block those cancer cells from growing and spreading while leaving healthy cells alone as much as possible.
So less of a widespread attack like chemo and more of a, what, a surgical strike?
That's a great way to put it. And because of that targeted approach, they tend to have fewer side effects. And often those side effects are less severe than what you'd see with traditional chemo.
Okay, that's good to hear. But nothing's completely side effect free.
Right.
Like, what can you see with targeted therapies?
True, nothing's perfect. But yeah, the side effects are often milder than chemo. And the specific ones you get really depend on the exact targeted therapy being used.
Can you give me some examples? What are they targeting? And what are the potential downsides?
Sure. One group that's making a big splash is called tyrosine kinase inhibitors, or TKIs. Kinases are like messengers inside cells, telling them when to grow and divide. In a lot of cancers, these kinases are stuck in the on position, so the cells just keep growing like crazy.
Like a car stuck in overdrive.
Perfect analogy. TKIs are like slamming on the brakes, blocking those overactive kinases, and slowing down that runaway growth.
Yeah.
They've been incredibly effective for some types of leukemia and other cancers.
That's awesome. But you mentioned downsides.
Well, TKIs can cause some issues like skin rashes, diarrhea, sometimes even heart problems.
Okay, so not risk-free, but again, sounds different from the chemo side effects.
Definitely. And we're getting better at anticipating and managing those side effects. For example, we know that some TKIs can mess with heart function, so we monitor patients closely for any signs of trouble.
Like having a mechanic checking your engine to make sure everything's running smoothly?
Exactly. Oh, and there's another type of targeted therapy I wanted to mention. Monoclonal antibodies.
Monoclonal antibodies. That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful, but the concept is pretty cool. Think of them like tiny, highly trained assassins sent in to take out those cancer cells. They're lab-created proteins that are designed to recognize and latch onto specific proteins found on the surface of cancer cells.
So each one is like a custom-designed weapon for that specific type of cancer.
You got it. And once they latch onto those cancer cells, they basically trigger a chain reaction that destroys the cell.
Wow, that's incredible. It's like going from using a sledgehammer to using a laser.
Great way to put it. But just like with any powerful tool, there are potential downsides. Monoclonal antibodies can cause some side effects, like infusion reactions. Some people get chills, fever, rashes, that sort of thing, during the infusion. And in rare cases, there can be more serious problems, like organ damage.
It seems like with all these new therapies, having a really skilled oncologist, someone who knows how to handle those potential side effects, is more important than ever.
Absolutely. Cancer treatment is getting more complex all the time. You need a whole team of experts to navigate it safely. Oncologists need to be on top of the latest research, understand how these new therapies work, and be able to create a treatment plan that's right for each patient.
It's like being a master chef, knowing how each ingredient works and how to combine them to make an amazing dish.
I like that. It's about finding the right combination of therapies, dosages, and supportive care to give each patient the best chance of success with the fewest bumps in the road.
We've covered a ton of ground here, from the nuts and bolts of chemo to the mind-blowing world of immunotherapy and targeted therapies. But there's one more piece of the puzzle we need to talk about.
You're right. The journey doesn't end when the treatment does. For a lot of cancer survivors, the road ahead can be just as challenging, just in different ways.
That's a really important point.
Yeah.
What happens when the chemo's done, the immunotherapy's over, the targeted therapies have run their course? What kind of support do people need to navigate life after cancer?
That's where survivorship care comes in. It's a newer field, but it's growing fast. And it's all about helping cancer survivors live their best lives after treatment.
Survivorship care. I like the sound of that. Tell me more. What does it actually involve? It's like, okay, decision time. But with all these options, how do you choose? It's not like picking a character in a video game, right?
Right. It's not a menu. It's more like creating a custom strategy. It takes a lot into account. And the most important factor, the type of cancer we're dealing with. That's the starting point.
Makes sense. Breast cancer is different from lung cancer, different from leukemia. It's not one size fits all.
Not at all. Each type of cancer has its own, like, personality, its own quirks. Some are really vulnerable to chemo, while others might respond better to immunotherapy or targeted therapy.
So you got to know what you're up against. Choose the right weapon for the job.
Exactly. And then we look at how far the cancer spread, what stage it's at. Early stage cancer is way different from something that spread to other organs.
Yeah, like containing a campfire versus a forest fire.
perfect analogy. And just like firefighters adjust their tactics, oncologists adjust their approach based on the cancer stage. Early on, surgery or radiation might be enough. But if it's more advanced, you might need chemo, immunotherapy, maybe a combo of different things.
It's like a carefully planned strategy, using the right tools at the right time.
I like that. But it's not just about the cancer itself. The person matters too. Their overall health, medical history, how old they are, even their lifestyle.
Because what works for a healthy 20-year-old might not work for someone older or someone with other health problems.
You got it. Someone who's already battling other health issues might not be able to handle the same intensity of treatment. It's about finding that balance, the strongest treatment that the patient can actually tolerate.
Weighing the benefits against the risks, right? Like,
yeah.
How much can the body handle?
Exactly. And it gets even trickier. You have to think about the patient's values, what's important to them. Some people, they'll go through anything if it means a chance at a cure. Others, they prioritize quality of life above all else.
It's a deeply personal decision, not just a medical one.
Absolutely. It's about those tough conversations, really understanding the patient's fears, their hopes, what matters most to them, and making the decision together.
It's like choosing a travel buddy. You want someone who knows the way, but also someone who gets you, who understands your limits.
Love that. That doctor-patient relationship is so important. Oh, and I almost forgot. We also have to factor in genetics.
Okay, now we're talking genes.
Mm-hmm.
How does that play into it?
Well, we all have our own unique genetic makeup, right? And those tiny differences in our DNA can actually affect how our bodies handle medications, including those powerful cancer treatments.
So what you're saying is our genes can predict how well we might handle a certain drug, or even if it'll work at all.
That's the idea. It's called pharmacogenomics, and it's changing how we think about cancer treatment. By looking at someone's genes, we can see who might have a higher risk of side effects from a specific drug. Maybe we need to adjust the dose, maybe we need a different drug altogether.
It's like getting a sneak peek into the future, seeing how your body's going to react before you even start.
Exactly. And it's not just side effects. We can also use genetics to see how likely someone is to respond to a certain treatment.
So it's about maximizing the chances of success while minimizing the risks. Amazing. Mm-hmm. It's like cancer treatment is getting more and more personalized.
It really is. It's not one size fits all anymore.
Yeah.
We're moving toward treatments that are as unique as the people they're meant to help.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive. Chemo side effects, the incredible world of immunotherapy and targeted therapy, the importance of survivorship care. It's a lot.
It is a lot, but it shows you how complex and constantly evolving cancer treatment is. New discoveries all the time, new challenges, new hope.
And that's why taking these deep dives is so important, right? Understanding the science, the risks, the possibilities. It helps us make informed decisions about our health, advocate for ourselves and our loved ones.
I couldn't agree more. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to something as important as our health.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to wrap up this deep dive into chemotherapy and cancer treatment. Thanks for joining us. We hope you found it helpful, informative, and maybe even a little bit hopeful. Until next time, keep asking those questions, keep learning, and keep diving deep.